I'm the sinister, Mr. Kiss, my ass is just a renegade. Never been afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time of day, cause I'm a renegade. Never been afraid to talk about anything,
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 anything.
Renegade.
Never been afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time of day, cause I'm a renegade.
What's up, everyone? Once again, it's your boy T, live from Fenway, deep in the heart of good old Boston, Massachusetts. Home of the World Series champion of 2018, the Boston Red Sox. I have a new feature that I want to get out there on the podcast, something that I wanted to start a while back. Obviously, I didn't get to it where everything was going on, but I made mention that I am a movie fan. I've dabbled in screenwriting. I've been out to LA. I've pitched scripts. I've had a lot of people interested in my material. Nothing came to life, but I've almost had a couple of deals, and I do love movies. I'm there. I think I said before, 40 Sundays out of the 52 weekends of the year. I love movies. My friends always come to me for movie tips, movies advice. What's my take on a movie? I love talking about movies. Movies, movies, movies. That's me. That's T. That's a part of who I am. And now I'm going to implement one of my movie reviews. What I want to do here is not every single movie that comes out, because trust me, I am so neurotic that I have to see movies that I know are going to suck. Yes, I willingly go into seeing movies. I pay my hard-earned money to see movies that I know are going to suck because the screenwriter in me wants to know what not to write or why that sold, why studios put money behind it. And I just go in there and I study it. There's a fine line I walk every time I go see a movie. It's either the writer in me kicks in or just the fan. If I can enjoy a movie and totally turn off the screenwriter in me, that means they did their job. If you're not really selling me on the movie, the screenwriter breaks things down every time I see a movie. I immediately know, you know, 1 minute of screen time is one page of a script. I could tell the first 10 minutes if I'm going to like the movie. I know the introduction, the backstory of the characters, that they spent time developing them. When the first act is complete, then the plot point kicks in and spins into act two. That's where we call the trailer minutes kick in. That's all the action. That's where the conflict is introduced to the main character or main characters. And then going into act three, there's another plot point where all hope is lost and the hero thinks that there's no way out, they're not going to win. Then somehow, some way, they figure out the plan or the approach or get the attitude to save the day, to save the world, to get the girl. And then the movie comes to an end. That kicks in all the time. Even when I'm watching TV shows at home, I'm just obsessed with movies and the screenwriter kicks in if you're not really doing your job. So what I want to do here is do my reviews in a different approach, T-style, of course. I want to do 15-minute reviews. Now, I've been babbling on a little bit just to do an introduction. I won't do this every time. When I do future reviews, I'll get right into it. But I want to do the movies that are popular, right? The ones that that everybody's going to see, just so you can have my take on it. There will be spoilers. So if you did not see this movie, do not listen to this. If you want to listen to it with my take on it, the review, there's going to be some spoilers behind it. So just prepare yourself for that, because I'm going to talk my way through the movie. And I want to do it in 15 minutes. That's going to be the review. That's going to be my take on it. So I wanted to start with Venom. Obviously, I didn't get to that because I've been off here. Obviously, that everything was going on with my mom and my life. So no review for Venom. I'll just let you know that I think it was ridiculous that they made a Venom movie that wasn't the hard R, which it should have been. I think it would have been a lot better. And I also think it's ridiculous that they made a Venom movie without Spider-Man. Yes, I know that not every comic book movie needs to be true to the source material, but you can't have a Venom movie who is an arch enemy of Spider-Man without having Spider-Man in the damn movie or any type of Spider-Man tie-in. So I think that was stupid. I love Tom Hardy. I think he's a great actor, one of my favorite actors. But if you're going to keep Spider-Man out of that, they should have went down the road of making that a hard R via, you know, the way they approach Deadpool or Logan. But they didn't. So Deadpool was fantastic as an R, so it wasn't Logan. And Suicide Squad, I think, would have been a lot better too as an R movie. But that PG-13 in a violent movie where you got a violent character like Venom, who is not quite a villain, not quite a hero, they should have made it an R movie. They should have had Spider-Man in it, and they didn't do the job. So Venom, I didn't do a full review of that, but I just want to let you know that Venom, I thought, was not as good as it was going to be. So I would recommend Venom. Definitely something you may want to see in theaters. Otherwise, wait for Netflix. All right, enough about Venom. We're here for Halloween. So I'm going to do Halloween. I spent about 5 minutes on Venom. So I'm going to do about 10 minutes on Halloween. So Halloween, this is a remake. This is actually not a remake. It's a direct sequel from the original. So what you have to do is you have to forget all the other sequels happened, even part two. Part two takes place immediately after part one when Michael attacked Laurie in the house and she ends up in a hospital, I believe under police supervision, and then Michael attacks her there. It continues the same Halloween night. That doesn't happen. Part three didn't happen. The one with the niece didn't happen. The one with the witches didn't happen. Halloween H2O doesn't happen. The one with Busta Rhymes doesn't happen. The one where Laurie chops off his head doesn't happen. The Rob Zombies remakes, part one and two, those did not happen. You gotta forget every other Halloween happened. And think of this as a direct sequel, a continuation of the original 40 years ago. Now, I had my doubts about that. I didn't think they could pull it off. I didn't think that would be, you know, that good. Turns out that Danny McBride is one of the writers. Danny McBride is one of my favorite writers and actors. He is Kenny Powers. Kenny Powers himself, the greatest baseball pitcher ever from the show Eastbound and Down, and obviously Vice Principals and several other movies. I love Danny McBride. He knows how to make a comedy. I didn't think he actually could pull off a horror movie. And John Carpenter and Jamie Lee Curtis themselves actually produced this as well, this remake. So you had the original talent with some fresh talent on top of it. And what happened was a pretty good sequel. I have to admit, I think they did a great job making it believable, making it a continuation of that original one. You were able to suspend belief that the other sequels did not happen. It picks up 40 years after the original. So put all those sequels aside. And what you have right here is Michael in an insane asylum. Dr. Loomis is obviously dead. There's another doc that's taken over as a student from Dr. Loomis. He's much older, and he allows a couple of journalists who do podcasts, you know, to make it more relevant in 2018, almost 2019, to come in and talk to Michael Myers. Now, throughout the whole movie, Michael Myers, they do not show his face. He's clearly an old guy. He's the original Michael Myers, the guy that played him. He's tall. He's a big son of a bitch. He's you occasionally see like sides of his face. You see him in a silhouette. You see him in reflections, shadows, off to the side, a blur. They try to do that because the original Michael Myers, I remember this even as a kid hearing this before even the internet came out, was called The Shape. So The Shape is Michael Myers. And you really don't get to see his face, but you see like markings of it. He's been scarred up. He's been through something, which obviously is from the original where he had the gunshot wounds and all that too. So Michael's in a sane asylum. He doesn't say a word. The podcast has come in. They kind of taunt him. They even bust out the old William Shatner mask that he had killed people in. They don't get a reaction out of him. Somehow, some way, the day before Halloween, Michael Myers is being transported to another insane asylum. Yeah, just a coincidence, right? You kind of know that there's something going on with that, right? Somehow that bus goes off to the side of the road. The inmates get free. Michael gets free. And lo and behold, he drives to his sister's neighborhood. Yes, he remembered how to drive. I don't think he ever learned how to drive because, again, this is the screenwriter me, so I got to pick apart a little bit. Remember, he killed his big sister when he was like, what, 6, 8 years old, whatever that was, the original Halloween. Then went after Laurie in that movie too. And then at some point, you know, he got put into an insane asylum for the last 40 years. So this guy probably spent, I don't know, the bulk of his life in an insane asylum. And obviously at 6 years old, 8 years old, whatever, you weren't learning how to drive. But he knows how to drive a pickup truck. And he drives that truck to a gas station. And conveniently, he ends up at the same gas station. There must have only been one in that whole town at the same time as those two podcasters who have his mask. You know what he does to those podcasters. He gets his mask back. And even in the back of that gas station, there was a mechanic. You look at that mechanic on screen, Michael kills him. He's not that big. But somehow, some way, the jumpsuit that he had on, Michael takes that too. So there you go. The what we call him in the industry, a MacGuffin, which is a, you know, a physical and inanimate object that doesn't move, that makes it part of the storyline. Michael gets his mask back. Michael gets a new jumpsuit back. And of course, what's he need now? He needs his knife. I'll get into that in a little bit. So Michael is ready to go. He's back in the town. Laurie, in the meantime, while this is going on, was basically just somebody who went nuts over the past 40 years. She became so paranoid from what happened with Michael. She learned how to train herself to fight, all different types of guns, hand-to-hand combat. She booby-trapped her house. She rigged it to protect herself, and she trained her daughter that same way. Her daughter thought she was nuts. The daughter gets taken away at a young age, and the daughter grows up, and she has a daughter. So Laurie has a granddaughter. Laurie's still batshit crazy, and she thinks Michael's going to come, and she gets paranoid every Halloween, which, true to form, she was right, because Michael makes his way into that town. Michael somehow comes into that town, and it's Halloween night, and he can walk around like a madman because nobody thinks anything about it. But obviously, people in that town from the media in the past are aware of Michael Myers. They find out he's loose. It's on the news. And Michael's just running around the town looking to get all his killings in before he goes and finds Laurie. Now, one thing about the original that in part two they revealed was Laurie, her name was changed. Laurie was actually Michael's sister. In this one, no. They actually address it. There's a quick little scene where her granddaughter and her friend and her friend's boyfriend talk about, hey, wasn't your grandmom supposedly the sister of Michael Myers, and they changed her name when she was a kid, and the granddaughter's like, nope, that was an urban legend. That was a rumor that never happened. So they're not brother and sister in this, so you got to keep that out of your mind too. But he's obsessed with Laurie. He wants to go back and finish the job that he started 40 years ago. So he's making his way around town, and they do a really cool, gritty shot, one long continuous shot, a couple of quick edits towards the end of it where it was typical John Carpenter. It felt like a John Carpenter movie. This is something that is refreshing this day and age. There was no CGI. It was hardcore. It was gritty. And that's what the original Halloween was. So if the people that really didn't watch the original didn't appreciate it, I was a baby when the first one came out, but obviously I've seen them all. You'd appreciate this, like the blood, how people get killed, how they get murdered, how they get the violence of Michael, what he does. So this one continuous shot, Michael just goes from house to house killing people because that's what he does. And he goes from, gets his hands on a hammer, turns that in, and the last MacGuffin, he gets his classic knife. So he has his mask, his jumpsuit, and the knife, and Michael's just going around killing sons of bitches. And while that's happening, the granddaughter's at a little school dance, has a falling out with the boyfriend. She's trying to make her way through the neighborhood. But the police are trying to get to Michael and save the family before that happens. Laurie's on the hunt to kill Michael herself. She actually shoots him, runs into him on a side alley, and almost come head-to-head. She shoots him in the side of the head. He keeps on going. The cops come. The original one of the cops is actually from the original movie. Not the original guy that played him, but he's supposed to be one of the young rookies that came on the scene, and he remembered Michael from all those years ago. And the doctor. So it turns out this new doctor was the one that actually rigged the release of Michael on the bus. He actually was obsessed with him. There's a scene where he puts the mask on. Michael ends up killing him. And then they all end up conveniently at Laurie's Fortress of Solitude, like Superman, where the police are there, Laurie's there, and she's going to go heads up one-on-one with Michael. It turns out Michael kills all the cops in the house, kills the daughter's husband, and all that's left is Laurie, her daughter, and her daughter's daughter. So Laurie's granddaughter, the three ladies. It's 2018, right? Women's empowerment. Laurie Strode was actually one of the strong female characters from the late 70s, early 80s. So, you know, that's something they got to keep going today, and the whole Me Too movement and all that too. So respect to that. And Jamie Lee Curtis was a badass in this movie. A lot like Linda Hamilton was in Terminator 2, and I think Linda Hamilton's going to be in the next Terminator, which they're making right now. So Laurie does a great job of going after Michael. She wants to kill the guy. She blocks off rooms in her house. She got the guns, and she and Michael actually throw down. There's a reverse little scene where Michael throws her out the window. She lands. When he goes to look, she's not there. That's a homage to the original where Michael falls out the window. Laurie goes to look, and he's not there. So Laurie comes back in, traps him in the house. The daughter actually gets a shot off at Michael. They run up the stairs. Michael's down the basement. They lock him in with the booby-trapped house. And it's just the daughter, the granddaughter, and Laurie. And they look at Michael. She lights the whole place on fire. Place, boom. Doesn't really explode. I shouldn't have done the boom. But it burns down. And they leave. They get out of there. A little pickup truck picks them up. And it's the three girls in the pickup truck. And the granddaughter's holding the classic Michael Myers knife. Then there's a little quick little spoiler, which a lot of movies are doing now, mostly comic book movies, where after the first opening credits, you hear Michael breathing. So did he get out of the house? Probably. The movie opened up at like 85 million. It's the highest rated, highest grossing R-rated movie in years. I think this is going to guarantee a Halloween 2 sequel. What are we calling it? I don't know. Halloween 2. I don't know if we call it 2, but I think there will be a sequel. It made a lot of money. It was good. It was great. It was well written. They did a good job in it. It was felt like a sequel, and you were able to forget all the other. I mean, it felt like a direct sequel, but you got to ignore all the other sequels that happened. So my review of Halloween, as a writer, as a fan, I think they did a good job. I recommend it. I know this is going up pretty late, but it's still playing in some theaters, so go see it. T recommends it. I don't know what my type of review is going to be. Two thumbs up. I'd say yeah. Give it an A+, whatever. I pull that off in less than 10 minutes, and that's what I want to do with these movie reviews. Doom it under 15 minutes. So T says go see Halloween. That was Halloween in 15. And where to find me on social media, again, on Instagram, the_T_podcast. and T-Blog. Those are the two accounts on Twitter, at T-Blog, T-B-L-A-W-G. You can email me. Let me know if you want to hear more about movie reviews, because I can review anything. I've seen every movie made, well, 99.9% of them. You can email me at t@t-blog.com. Hit me up on the Facebook T-Blog page. I don't have the T-Podcast page anymore. I just go on the T-Blog page, so reach me out on there. And, of course, always here on iTunes. And the place that started it all, tblog.com. So, that was my movie review. T reviewed Halloween in 15. Until next time, always take it there.
Afraid to say what's on my mind at any given time of day, cause I'm a renegade.